and 10, which is a combined hearing. It's an application for subdivision rezoning of 50 Ridgecrest Avenue in the Old Kildonan Ward under file DSZ 22 of 2008 from an R1E residential district to an RMFM residential multifamily district. And we'll also be considering item 10, which is an application for variance under file DAV 122-600 of 2008D for the development of an accessory parking area with a reduced front yard.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. David, before you proceed, I just want to let you know that you have about 10 minutes to do your presentation. Okay. And if you could state your name and address for the record, please.
David Paladeski, Lombard North Group, 505-93 Lombard Avenue, Winnipeg.
Welcome.
Thank you. Proceed. I've reviewed the administration's report, both the planner's report and the ACG. I've reviewed the planner's report and the ACG report. We concur in the recommendations of the planner and the conditions that the planner has identified for approval. And we accept, in general, the recommendations and conditions of approval in the ACG report. There's two areas I'd like to focus in that we are proposing a slight adjustment. And I'll review the reason for the adjustment in my presentation. The first is land dedication. We're proposing, as per our letter, that we believe it's important that the view angles at the intersection of Ridgecrest Avenue and River Grove Drive are protect the view angles by providing that land as part of the public open space. The city is administration is recommending that open space be by way of cash and 10% dedication. We would like to propose that the, as illustrated in Schedule A, that we add to the park, Riverbank Park area by providing the view over the proposed condominium site to the river be a public dedicated space to the city of Winnipeg. Secondly, in regards to the front yard variance, again, in terms of where we placed the visitor parking, we did not want to place the visitor parking in a location that would obstruct or reduce the quality of the view of the river from the intersection of Ridgecrest Avenue and River Grove Drive, and that is why we proposed its location and suggested a reduction in the front yard in the initial proposal. The number of parking spaces we've provided is 1.5, but this is a seniors 55. I shouldn't say seniors because I'm in that age group. Let's say this is an empty nester kind of project where we find, in terms of talking to our realtors, that the incidence of empty nesters and retired individuals having two cars is substantially reduced, and we would be proposing to remove the variance by eliminating the 13 parking spots. That would mean that we would be increasing the front yard from instead of 7.28 meters, we would be 7.62 meters. We'd be increasing the front yard to 9.3 meters. That wouldn't require a variance, so we would be withdrawing the variance application. And conditionally, as provided in the City of Winnipeg's new zoning bylaw, we would undertake a parking management study and submit that study to validate the parking requirements and submit that study for consideration and approval of the district planner and the designated zoning officer. In terms of the presentation, as I said, this is the site context plan. This is the River Ridge development, the high school is illustrated here. The location of the property is outlined in the heavy dark line. This is a previously approved subdivision by the community committee. The subdivision hasn't been initiated yet, but may so in the future. This is a private parcel of land. When the application for this, or when this development project was contemplated, my client, the property owner at this location, inquired with the adjoining property owner, Mr. and Mrs. Sampson, if they would be interested in becoming a participant in part of it and They've indicated in a letter to my client that they are not interested in becoming a participant, but would prefer to stay on their lot as they have in the past. This is the River Ridge development. This is the location of the River Ridge Park, and the park has a narrow access onto Ridgecrest Avenue. This is the location that we're proposing the dedicated to the city, so this view angle in this direction here can preserve for the public. We also feel it gives a larger window into the public access that leads to Macbeth Park, and in the future can lead to Kildonan Park using the sidewalks that are constructed and the previous developments in terms of connectivity to Scotia Street. So this is the proposed open space dedication, so we would like to offer the city consideration in accepting this dedication, along with the idea that this would be added to the dedication to make up part of the 10% dedication that the city's administration has recommended. In terms of the parking layout plan, this is the initial parking plan. Again, as you can see, our concern was protecting this view, and as a consequence, we placed the access and parking at this location. By having this 13 units or 13 parking spaces, that necessitated the variance. Our proposal is to basically remove that parking space, thus increasing the side or the front yard beyond 25 feet. And this is just a more detail of the proposal and the refinement that we're proposing to the sector plan or the site plan. I have a series of slides that illustrate how this building would fit into the neighborhood. We've taken a significant amount of time in studying the building setbacks. The building is two buildings instead of one. We did a number of considerations in terms of location. We started with a single building. We were concerned that it didn't provide views through the site, and so we changed the approach. So this is an illustration of the site approaching the site from Ridgecrest Avenue. This is the high school on the left-hand side. This is the existing situation. This is the building superimposed on the site. It's a six-story building. It has 80 units. And as I drive up the street, then you'll get a more detailed view. This is an illustration of the site from the top of the flood protection dike. This is the pathway that exists here. And this is the view of the building from the park area along the river at the top of the dike. And actually, this location here, this is part of the private lots, and the trail system comes down by the river at this location. The building will be constructed of masonry and concrete. It'll have curtain walls, so the windows will wrap around the corners. Balconies are directed towards the river for the river view. It'll be a high-quality building with brick as the exterior. This is the view of the site coming down River Grove Drive. Landscaping of the boulevards will be completed this summer. It's not in when these pictures were taken earlier in the spring. And this is the building's view off of Griffindale. This is Griffindale Bay here, and these lots back onto Ridgecrest Avenue, and there's a fence between that's sort of a buffer between the rear of the lots and the houses in Ridgecrest Avenue. This is a view from the sidewalk overlooking the site at the rear of Griffindale Bay lots. I'm standing on the sidewalk. The reason this picture looks a little odd here is that we had to take two photographs. When we used a wide-angle lens, it distorted the view. It made it wrap around, so we felt that this was truer in terms of what it would look like. This demonstrates basically, you know, a very large concern on our part and our client's part that we want to ensure that the building, you'll notice that the building is actually stepped back from the street. So the first two levels, basically, which are similar to a single-family home level, are actually stepped back so that levels 4 or 3 to 6 are stepped back so that the resulting view angle from the sidewalk is actually less than the view angle if you were standing on a curb, looking at a single family house that is two stories, 18 feet with the garage, 18 feet from the street. The view angle of that house would be at about 60%. The view angles here, depending upon which building, are to the main level approximately 24%, and to the top level 40% in terms of the view angle. So the impression that you have standing on the street is that the street is not dominated by the building. The building is set back significantly from the street so that we have a transition that is similar to a transition in a single-family house on a single-family street. Now I'm just moving into the site. This is a view from the other side of the river, and basically it gives you sort of a sense of the importance of the, in our opinion, of the preserving the view corridor from the intersection of Ridgecrest Drive and River Grove Drive as a public space. The City of Winnipeg doesn't have standards with regards to shadow studies, but we felt in terms of placement of the buildings that we wanted to understand their impact on the adjoining land. So we undertook a series of shadow studies through the various equinoxes of the year, so spring, summer, fall, and winter, just to determine what the impact of the building would be on the adjoining properties. We obviously want to try and set the buildings back, and that's why we stepped it back from the street, and that's why we moved the upper levels further back from the lower levels, or the lower first two levels from the street, so that we could minimize any impact of shadows on people. We don't want people to be barbecuing in their yard in the summertime and having the shadow of the building over their yard. So this is an illustration of the spring, which is March 21st. This is 9 a.m. in the morning. This is the direction of the sun coming up. This is the shadows in the site. This is at noon. The shadows of the site shift around as the sun shifts. And at 4 o'clock, the shadows of the site are still contained within the right-of-way. This is in the summer, the shadows of the site at, again, 9 o'clock in the morning, noon, with the sun almost directly overhead, and at 4 p.m. This is the fall, 9 a.m., the shadows in the morning on September 21st, the shadows at noon, September 21st, and the shadows at 4 o'clock on September 21st. In the winter, obviously, the shadows of the building are going to be very dramatic. This is at 9 a.m. The sun has just come up in Winnipeg at 9 a.m. At noon, the sun is still low in the horizon, and the shadows do reach to the fence line along the rear of the lots. And at 4 o'clock on December 21st, the sun sets at about 4:22. The shadow is basically over the entire residential development, and even the single-family home adjoining its shadow extends beyond the street into the site. And the shadows from each one of these houses in here, if we added that, this whole area would be dark at that time of the day. That's my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I can leave the presentation here should anybody want to refer to it later.
Thank you, Mr. Palyavsky. Councilor Lazarenko.
David, you say the shadow there. Is that a residential dwelling, just a small little, just mm-hmm. to the left of the building?
Yes. This is Mr. and Mrs. Sampson's dwelling here.
Yes. So they'll get very little sun, or they'll get a lot of sun.
At 9 a.m., the shadow of the building, when the sun just coming up, this shadow line goes out to basically Main Street. What other jurisdictions do, Winnipeg doesn't have standards, Toronto does, in trying to look at what I could use as approach that could guide us. I've talked to planners that I know in Toronto and the city of Vancouver, searching for information from them. And typically, you know, what we find is that from a shadow point of view, you know, the intent is to minimize any intrusion of the shadow in the adjoining area, particularly in the months that people are outside. In wintertime, very few people will be outside in their backyard, will be huddled up and by inside trying to keep warm in the rec room or something like that. So that is really the major month that we would have an intrusion of shadows. But for every single family house here, there will be an intrusion of shadows on the adjoining land at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on December 21st.
Mr. Chairman, I have one final question.
Yes, Lazarenko.
In respect to the proposed open space dedication of the land, any stabilization has to be done on that parcel of land?
No, actually, the stabilization was done by the adjoining developer to the... So let me just Current stabilization has been done to here. We are aware that we have talked with a geotechnical engineer, and one of the conditions of approval by the ACG is basically ensuring that the site is stable and it's built to floodproofing standards. The site is above the 1 in 700 year flood elevation level. We do know that the adjoining property has some stability issues. They may impact this site. The intent is to determine to what degree it will, and we'll have, once we have policy direction and approval, engage a geotechnical engineer to determine what needs to be done, and if it's beneficial to look at extending the stabilization into the adjoining property owned by Mr. McDonald and Geo Investments, we'll work out an agreement with them. But we felt before we could do so that we need to give them the information so that they could see what the study is basically proposing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Further questions?
Mr. Pelubeski, have you had meetings in the community with for neighborhood residences?
We had two meetings. We met with the residents to the south on Scotia Street, and they have one set of considerations and issues, and then we put in all of the mailboxes of the houses to from Ridgecrest Avenue to the adjoining or to two streets to the north, notices and contacted the builders and involved in the project and sent them copies of basically this presentation. And we had a meeting with residents in the Griffindale Bay Area. We didn't have very many residents at the meeting from Griffindale.
How many would that be?
I think we had about six.
Six people attended that meeting?
And then for Scotia Street, we had a fairly reasonable representation in terms of the number of houses there. Maybe we may have had, I think there's 12 houses. We may have had six to seven people attend the meeting.
Okay. People in Scotia know how to take care of themselves.
Yep.
Okay. If the clause at the moment, if there were to be a recommended approval and if the dedication clause were amended, instead of just 10% dedication be paid in a sum of money, if we added and or land, allowing for combinations of the two, that would allow further negotiation between you, your client, and the administration.
Yes.
And there is, of course, an appeal process, yep, as you know. But other than that, you have no concerns with the reports of our administration, the planners, or the ACG?
No. I think
that's all been defined for the area, yep, by the previous applications anyway.
And I want to compliment the city from the point of view of a technical review process. We have gone through the new technical review process with the city, so we had a chance to deal with the technical issues that the city administration has identified earlier. And I think that's a great great way of doing things. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pelubeski. Stand down for a few minutes. Another person registered in support is Doug McCann or Michan. You wish to speak? No? Okay, just registered in support. We now have a number of folks registered in opposition. I'll just call you by name, and if you can indicate if you wish to speak or not. Gloria Sampson, you wish to speak? You wish to speak? Yeah. You're with Walter Sampson. Do you wish to speak together?
My husband has been mention something here about the...
Sorry, Ms. Sampson, if you could state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Gloria Sampson. I live at 2393 Main Street. Probably have a few questions. My husband can ask the questions. But there was something here. I had received a letter from Mr. McDonald. And when this project, when Mr. Macon was thinking of doing this project, he had said that as your adjacent landowner, we felt that you would have appreciated our support and cooperation for your development, which is higher than currently approved for in the area. Now, Mr. McDonald was telling Mr. Macon this, that was higher than what's approved for in that area. And then when I looked at this report that you gave, it said that it's only 40% of what could be, of what what you could build. In other words, there's 80, but there could be 199 condos there. It's only 40%, and yet this one's saying that it's higher than it's currently approved. So I just wanted to know what the discrepancy was. I don't understand how there's, like, if it's...
I don't think the city of Winnipeg can take any responsibility for letters written between Mr. McDonald and Mr. McKenna. I don't really think that involves the city of Winnipeg in any way.
Okay, well, and okay, then let's just forget that and say the 40% of what you're building, of what he's going for, saying 40%. And you're saying that it could be 199?
That's only 40. We're not saying any of that.
No, in the letter, in your papers that I read, it said it's 40% of what...
Maybe Mr. Yock can clarify. I don't know what you're talking about.
Could you read that?
Sure. What the report says is that under the RMFM density allowance, the applicant could construct up to 199 units in the proposed
if
80,
we approved it.
Which is 40% of what the maximum density would be in that zoning district.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is that if this went through and you passed it and somebody else wants to come and rezone, as everything happens all the time, could somebody come and rezone for 199 out and say, well, that's 100%. We can do that and you can pass it?
We can pass it today. We could
for 199 units?
We could allow 10,000 units today. Okay. We wouldn't.
No, but I'm
there's
just
no,
saying...
There's no maximum limit on what the city of Winnipeg could allow. If you go downtown to, pardon me, to Fort Rouge and you find 55 Nassau in the middle of nowhere, 36 stories, there's nothing in the city of Winnipeg that would absolutely prohibit council's right to allow 210 stories. We wouldn't do it, though.
Well,
and if we approve something here, we can put a limit on the number of units, but that would not stop any future owner or this present owner from coming back and applying again for more. You can apply for whatever you want.
Okay.
Hopefully we would not approve something like that.
Well, all I'm saying is that I think with the amount of people and everything that's there, that the density is, that it's too many people. That's all I'm saying. It's too many people that are coming in there, that, and that it looks to me like it's being built in the flood line. Like when that new development went in there, they stabilized, they put the dike there and said that they couldn't build there.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're able to put apartments where they couldn't put homes, like on that flood line?
No, it's higher land.
And what about all the eroding land that's around there? That can't, like it has
that's
to be.
That's why they're doing riverbank stabilization. Why do we make these things conditions?
Okay, well, my husband will do the rest of the talk.
That's why I asked the question about the stabilization at riverbank.
Definitely needs it.
Thank you, Mr. Sampson.
All right.
Walter Sampson. State your name and address for the record, please.
Hi, my name is Walter Sampson. I'm a adjacent landowner at 2392 Main Street, which I think you might be here a few times before.
Okay, great.
Thank you much to Mr. Consul Shaughnessy and Mr. Ankle.
Have a seat.
I have a few concerns here, what's going on. And it's not very pleasant what I'm going to say to people, but I hope you respect the citizens of Winnipeg for a change, because I'm tired of this. First of all, the timely manner that you propose this meeting, you know that people work till 5 o'clock. They cannot attend here at all. So it's conveniently made for the developers, not for the citizens of Winnipeg, which are more important, I think. You have to address these people. They have no way of coming down here at 5 o'clock. They work till 5 o'clock. Most of your meetings are usually at 7 o'clock. You could have done that, but somehow this slipped through the cracks when at 5 o'clock. Area residents are at a disadvantage since they work and are unable to voice their opposition. We request to adjourn this meeting at an appropriate time so that it gives the citizens of Winnipeg a fair and equal representation and vote in this application. Let's not pass this under a cloud of suspicion. Report does not mention... The city report does not mention any variance at all. Now, that's flawed, too. Now, when you have a report and somebody's applying for a variance, it should be in there, but it's not. Secondly of all, I'd like to point out the report is flawed again. It said they contact the adjacent landowner, which is, I'm the only adjacent landowner, and you tell me who contacted me. Tell me which one about this proposal. Nobody. How would you like to be there and not be contacted? Something important is. Number three, I'll tell you, beautiful. Listen, I have nothing against this, but you know what? They just showed a picture of shadowing. Well, I did it better than that. They showed you a picture and you believe it. I can show you a picture. Would you believe it? I did my own study this morning. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I went outside. My trees are 30 feet high. And I looked to see how much my property was being shadowed. And my property was shadowed right to my door at that time. Now, if you raise the 30 feet to 60 feet, the trajectory will totally change. It'll cover my whole yard and pass. Nothing close to what he's got indicated in it. Does not work that way. So if they're going to put out a study, come down to my property or let them show me that, because I'll bring him 9 o'clock in the morning to my house and let's see him show me his trajectory as he's projected down here in the paper. Total lie. Total lie. And you're accepting it because, you know what, you're not there, you don't look at it, and you have no idea. Now, next question is, there's 6 blocks being built there right now. 6 blocks. And you're talking about congestion, a small two-way street in front of the school with the amount of people, just too dense for the amount of population going on there. And the block too high. I could understand it was a 3-story block or something like that. The people in the new development are going to be totally shadowed out. They bought their houses. A lot of them bought them when it looked good and looks good now. As soon as they move in, then they're going to be told all this is going on, which is not right. They should have an open meeting on this when the people are there, or an open meeting so that people can attend you at an appropriate time. So I ask for this council meeting to be adjourned. Next step, my last, and I hate to do this, and it's not nice. One time, about 12 or 15 years ago, Councillor O'Shaughnessy was at a meeting like this. And you know what happened? He stepped in and he said, you know what? I'm in a conflict of interest here. And he says, I have to step down. And he did, like that, gracefully. Now I ask him to do the same thing, to step down for a conflict of interest. I'll tell you why. If he wants to know, I'll bring it up. Can I do that, Councillor O'Shaughnessy?
No harm. And I'll sue your ass if you don't tell the truth. But if you do, why would I?
Yeah, okay. First of all, we had a meeting with CBLs. Richard knows you very well, by the way. Just have his name here. Marcel Cartier. He proposed some conditions that he wanted our property, and we thought we'd listen to him. And every second word that I heard him, I said, how about the riverbank here? He says, oh, don't worry about it. O'Shaughnessy will do it for us. Oh, this. Oh, O'Shaughnessy will do that for us. Oh, this. O'Shaughnessy will do that for us. So I'm just wondering, like, what's going on here? Like, secondly of all, I have a problem. Like, Mr. Paliabeski, he worked for the city. Your personal friends, the two of you. That's another reason you should step down. Third reason is, Mr. McCann drives you. And you talk to him about this stuff all the time. He drives you all over the place. Now, come on. Like, if I was in that kind of position, any other job, that's a total conflict of interest. He's like, you should step down. That's the honest truth. That's what I have to say. And there's a few more things, but I think you get the drift of what's going on here, and the people hopefully get the drift of what's going on, because that's not right. It's just not right. I mean, if you're up and beyond, you should step out forward and say, look, you know what, you're right. I do know these people. I'm working with these people. I'm telling these people what to do. I should step down. Let the other people step in. You know, I've been around a long time, too. You know, it's... You know, what's fair is fair. I mean, if you want to be honest to the people, the citizens of Winnipeg, and you're going to accept... I mean, this is going to pass one way through another. That's why I came down here. Because I know, like, if a person doesn't get a letter, nobody comes, notifies them this is going on. And where's your signs there for the rezoning? Where's the signs anywhere? One sign in the back of a fence. One sign. How many signs are you allowed? Just one sign? Is that the way things are done in the business of Winnipeg? No. Well, where are the signs? So you're not giving honest representation to the people around what's going on. There's no signs, nothing, and then you expect to just push this through. That's why there's no people here, because they don't know about it, and they can't attend 5 o'clock. You know that.
Questions? Yeah, Councilor Zrenko.
Mr. Sampson, comments you made about Councilor Shaughnessy, I've known David Filibeski just as much as long as Councilor Shaughnessy. Both of us have the same years of service. Starting in the 70s, and, Mr. Filibeski was a city planner, and a damn good city planner. Very good. I have a lot of respect for him. Do you think that I should step down, too, because I may have a conflict?
Just a minute. I didn't say because yes, you knew him. He drives you wrong. Does Mr. McCann drive you wrong? Answer that question.
to the public.
General Polyevsky, he's talking about McCann.
I'm talking about Mr. Polyevsky.
I'm talking about Mr. McCann, too. Not just one person. That's why I mentioned a bunch. And when a person like Mr. Marcel Cartier tells me that O'Shaughnessy is going to do everything for him, it's like you're just wondering what's going on here. I mean, it just doesn't sound reasonable. There's something suspicious here.
Okay, good. Finish, Mr. Sampson.
Well, you're the chair. What do you say?
Pardon me?
You're the chair. What do you say, sir?
What can you say? He's the chair.
You have no opinions to this?
Well, you're speaking to the report at hand.
Yes.
You think it should be adjourned?
To a different timetable so people can come attend and so you can hear them all, too, the people living in that area. That's not fair to just pass something through so they can attend at a certain time. You know yourself, at 5 o'clock, it's okay. You might work here. You can just step over on your overtime, whatever you do, to attend this meeting. I don't know how you work here, at what your office hours are for working. But for people that have definite jobs that work from 8 to 5, how do you expect them to attend? How is it possible? Can't answer that question. That's not right. If you can't answer that
Chairman,
question.
Well, these are published in the major papers.
Mr. Chairman, I agree.
If you work, you can't attend. If the meeting is not open to them, they can't attend. It's the same as you making this meeting 5 o'clock in the morning by yourself. There's no difference.
Okay. Mr. Sampson, thanks for your opinion.
Thank you.
Councilor Lazaranco?
I'm just saying he wouldn't change his opinion because he says you've got a conflict of interest. So what's the difference? What time do you have?
Yeah. Councilor Lazaranco? Councilor Shaughnessy?
Yeah, just to answer what Mr. Sampson has said there, number one, at 7 p.m., the doors aren't locked. There's a guard on. People could still come and register. This was our ninth hearing of the day, not our first. So it started after 6:30, so whatever. First, and I would like to briefly answer what he said. Mr. McCann, in his employment, drives a service vehicle for Terry Ortinsky Kia. When we go in for oil changes, he's the designated driver some of the time to bring me back to work and then pick me up when my service work is done. So that's not unusual, and that doesn't disqualify anybody. Secondly, Mr. Polyevsky was a planner for the City of Winnipeg when I was first elected, as Councilor Lestranko had said, and I do know him. We have zero social relationship. I've never been out with him socially, him, my wife, him, his fiancé or whatever. We've had zero relationship. Thirdly, the other fellow, Marcel Chartier, is a neighbor, lives one block from me. We don't see each other socially, and I do know him through businesses. I know many real estate agents in this city, but I can't control what he may or may not have said to Mr. Sampson, none of which has anything to do with this item. Unfortunately, people here don't run into this every day. Conflict of interest is very specific. It's if I have any money to be made out of this, I step down and go away. That's it. The fact that I happen to know somebody, I'll tell you, between the three councillors here, we might know half the people in Winnipeg, and that would be really... And if I happen to not know my constituents, as an example... How would I ever get elected as a councillor? You know people. But if you're not making money on the deal, then, believe me, it's not a conflict. And what he has accused me of is certainly not anything that I'm going to lose sleep over or see a lawyer over. But it's absolutely not pertinent to the hearing at all.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Proceeding with those registered in opposition, Gary, 62 Rivers Ridge, Cleason. State your name and address for the record, please.
Gary Kusian, currently building at, I think it's 62 Rivers Ridge.
Okay.
My concern is that I would like to have a development in this area that would be characteristic of a residential area.
Excuse me, sir, could you sit down so the microphone can pick you up?
Yes. My concern is that I would like to see a development that is more residential in terms of single family than a multifamily. I do so for two reasons. I do so for the characteristic of the area. I'm currently leaving Riverbend, and I had choices to go to Pritchard Farm and to go north of the city. And I found that I had a riverfront property here that could meet most of my needs. I'm currently moving off of Riverstone Road, where I'm on a busy road. I've moved into this area to avoid busy road. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. I want to play road hockey with them. I want them to drive a bike safely. I would like for this area to be more single family, young, youth, similar to the rest of the area that's in here right now. The second concern that I have is really around the property values of the value of the properties that are there already. I purchased the riverfront property. I spent some pretty dear money on it, and later on found out just a few weeks ago I have to sink an additional $35,000 worth of piles to build my home. Now, I think that in this area here there must be about 15 properties. At this point, I think we have 3 homes being built. Mine is one of the holes that's waiting for piles from British Columbia. So I'm wondering if these houses aren't being built right now, and if they're, I'm not sure if they're sold or not. I know that they may be sold, but if they're not being built right now at $130,000 plus $40,000 for piles, how are they going to get built later? So is this development going to enhance that street, or is it going to degrade from that street? When I drive in, that's going to be my natural route. I have an office and a building on Main Street. That's my route in. I currently look at must be half a dozen apartments, big, tall, concrete structures. Not the most pleasant view. As I come past there, and I knew this, I have a school. I have all sorts of concrete. You know, I have parking lots, I have cars. And now as I'm going to drive past this area, I'm going to have parking lots, I'm going to have concrete, I'm going to have something that may impede my skyline view. So if we have this sort of development coming in as opposed to some more single-family residential areas, I'm wondering about how that might affect the value of my home and that street and this development.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
Ms. Christian, thank you very much. Richie Reef and
yes.
Idilka Rojas?
Yes.
Rojas.
But I won't declare a conflict of interest. They used to live in my condo block. We know each other.
I have no problem.
My name is Richie Reef and my wife Idilka Tejas Rojas. We just recently bought a home on Griffindale Bay.
Lot number 3.
We bought it last fall. It was a specification home. We moved in March, and we found out about this particular project early in June. We were one of the few people that attended the session that they had at the West Kelowna Collegiate. One of the concerns, and I want to provide additional clarification, the homes that are most affected, in my opinion, would be these homes along here, lots 1 through 8. Out of lots 1 through 8, there's only one home that's occupied. That's lot number 3. That's my home. Lot number 1 is, and lot number 2 and lot number 4 are Qualico homes. They've been sold. They're being framed right now. Lot number 5 is an A&S home, is not occupied. Lot 6 and lot 7 are vacant land, and lot 8 is an A&S home and have not been occupied. Now, I did receive a notification, but again, mine was the only home that was occupied at the time, so that was probably part of the reason why they had limited attendance at that particular meeting. My concern overall is the effect of the property value, because now we're having a fairly large condominium project being built, you know, and I spent a sizable dollar to purchase this home. I purchased the home with a river view. That was probably my main consideration when I bought the home. And market interest rates are going up, inflation's going up, interest rates are going up. That's not good for the housing market. So you put a fairly large building in front of that, that's certainly not going to help my property values. I would agree, you know, with Mr. Sampson in the fact that the people on this particular street are the ones that are most affected and need to know, in addition to Mr. Sampson. I did actually try to attempt to talk to one of the builders, which was Qualico, the real estate agent that sold the lots, and they didn't really want anything to do with this. They have sold the property. It's not their concern. I completely understand that. My concern is that I'm the only one representing my entire street, and that's being affected. My comment to the shadow study is the shadow study does show various times. To Mr. Polovetsky's point, you know, people enjoy the properties most in the summer and the fall, but the shadow studies, they see, appear to stop at 4 p.m. What does a shadow look like at 6 o'clock? What does a shadow look like at 8 o'clock? I would assume that the shadows look a lot more like the ones in the fall because the sun is going to be closer to the horizon, casting a larger shadow. Again, a huge shadow over my property at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in whether it be the spring or the summer, I wouldn't be too particularly happy with that. So I would recommend that those shadow studies be further studied to the daylight hours, to go to 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock to see what the impacts would be. Again, overall, my concern is the effect on the residential property. You know, you're building a fairly large property here. It's a fairly small parcel of land. I'm not sure the exact size of it. It's 3-something acres. And as to Gary Quiston's point, when you drive up through Ridgecrest, when you come from Main Street, on the right-hand side, there's 6 brand-new apartment buildings that are being built. I believe they're 5 or 6 stories in height. I don't know how many.
4 stories.
4 stories.
Can you turn just a sec?
That area, since it was Old Cologne and was zoned commercial, we've just changed our zoning bylaw. But under the zoning bylaw,
right,
on commercial property, that density of housing was allowed. The total approval we had was plan approval, like the design.
Sure.
I made them change the roof line so they weren't 6 identical roof lines. That was all the approval we had. Our lawyer
sure.
said we had approval. We could not disapprove.
Sure.
So I would like to say I hate those apartment blocks. I allowed them on Leela. You know the ones on
right.
Leela. Same builder. They were the same. We needed rental. It was more away. But I take the blame for that. But for these ones,
wish. And that's fine.
What is it? We do have that control.
But when you're coming
over.
Down Ridgecrest, the first thing you see is you see 6 apartment buildings.
Yep.
And you drive a little further, then you see a high school. A lot of cement, large parking lot. To the right now, we have green space. We don't know what's going to happen on the north-south corner of Ridgecrest and Main Street. There's a church there. There's a lot of vacant land. Who knows what they're going to build there? It's on the corner of Main Street, so there could very well be some other large development there. Then you come further down, and now you're building a condominium here. So this does cause me concern, and again, it causes me concern because I have a feeling it's going to negatively impact my property values. So I would recommend that there be some further studies done that, you know, these properties will likely be occupied in the next 3 to 6 months, and that maybe we have another. I would also like to see a model. I have a little scale here of where the condo goes, but in reality, the condo may go a little bit more to the right, to the left. You know, my view may be obscured more. The people that are mostly affected, which are lots 4, 5, 6, and 7, aren't in their properties right now. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any questions?
No.
Okay, Mr. Reeve, thank you.
Thank
you. Glenn Anderson. Who wishes to speak?
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Name and address for the record, please.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my address was Hendrick.
Yeah, they got it.
Hi, I'm Glenn Anderson. I reside at 2673 Scotia Street. I was one of the individuals who attended the meeting held by the developers, proposed developers, in June, I believe. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your time this evening. And I would also like to speak in opposition to the rezoning. Presently, as you can see, this is zoned, as you mentioned earlier in the report, this is zoned single family. And if you also consider the McDonald Geel property, that is also zoned single family. You have River Ridge, you have all of that zone single family, and Scotia is also single family. As pointed out by a previous speaker and also supportive of Mr. O'Shaughnessy, the property directly in front of the high school, pardon me, the high school here, directly in front, has 6 apartment blocks on it, 4 presently built, 1 under construction, and 1 has a pad for it. That, albeit may be under commercial development and previous zoning laws, and I certainly respect that. But my concern more comes from what you call in your plan documents, of which I saw, and I, with all due respect, the most recent stats I could get when were 2001, the Stats Canada stats, statistics from census, and then you use those to create your models of what you call neighborhood clusters. Now, your neighborhood cluster, which you consider to be River Grove, encompasses this area and up to Main Street and beyond the Sobeys. Now, if you take that area, it's 1.53 square kilometers. It represents 0.3% of the city's surface, land surface. In 2001, there were 677 people per square kilometer. Very low. But again, in 2001, none of those apartments were there. River Grove, all of these houses were not there. Essentially, what you had is McDonald Geo property vacant as is present, Mr. Mahan's property, Mr. Sampson's property, and the 12 residents on Scotia. So very low population density. So given those numbers, and these are the only numbers I have because of the latest statistics of Canada, Stats Canada aren't out, and they haven't been produced by the city of Winnipeg, so I haven't seen them. But if you compare river properties across the city at a 0.3% of the city surface coverage, so basically I went down the Red River, and I took all of those neighborhood clusters, and I'm going right down the Red River on both sides of the Red River, and I basically said, okay, it's 0.3% of that area. What kind of population density do you have in 2001? And yes, it's changed. Probably it's denser. If you go to 0.3%, we have Norwood West. As you can see, I said River Grove was 1.53 square kilometers. Norwood West is 1.33 square kilometers. 2,368 people per square kilometer. If you go to, these are all river properties, Glenwood, 1.63, which is closer to 1.53, 2,277. Again, 0.3% of the city surface. Wildwood, 0.3% of the city surface. Very low, mainly because of a golf course, I believe, and perhaps a park. 1.28 square kilometers, 862, much closer to what the city River Grove area was at that point in time. And if you go through the city stats, essentially those are the numbers that you get for river properties. They certainly, when you get down to River Osborne, it's much higher. When you get to certain areas of the city, you get further out. St. Patel in 2001 didn't have the development it has today. They're kind of irrelevant, so I left them up. But if you take presently, there are 310 units in those five blocks. Most, in fact, virtually all of them are two bedrooms. Given that, they all, I took, okay, three people in an apartment. That's 900 people in those five blocks, so those six blocks that exist now, 310 units. So you add that to the proposed, 80 units here, two people, that's another 160. 677 plus 900 gets you 1,500, plus you add another 160, you're now in the order of 1,800 people per square kilometer, much closer to 2,200. Now, if you take the McDonald Geo property, which if you go back in the plan document, is all single family going forward at present, that would certainly add a significant number of people. And this does not include, that 1,900 does not include any of these residences. There's approximately 100 homes in here. Four people at home, that's 400. We're now at 23.
Over 200 homes.
Well, okay, so now you're at 25. So my question to you, why is this city surface area, at 0.3% of the city surface, getting an exorbitant amount of population density? Given that it has two lanes access, there's only one access to downtown Main Street. The city, the property I live in, if you go back to the plan document that Mr. Paliveski gave, I'm south of McDonald Geo, but I have, okay, thank you. My property is right here, okay? And perhaps right beside the individuals that Mr. O'Shaughnessy kindly appealed to as being the ones who make it so secure. But my Hells Angels are on the other side, and they don't consider them property owners. But my property, residents, family, the rest of the single families, we have one access on Main Street. It goes out John Black Avenue. We have to go all the way down. Now there's a proposed light at Ridgecrest. We used to go down to Fernbank to turn around. I'm sorry, the one Riverbend, what do they call it? We can't turn around on the other side until you get past the sewage plant because of the controlled intersection at Chief Pegos Trail. Now what you're doing is you're putting 2,500 people in here. It's going to get much worse. Plus, you've got all of West St. Paul funneling down this road. This adds to the problem. This doesn't decrease from the problem. Okay? This increases population density much. Plus, the McDonald Geo property presently is zoned single family. Nothing is to prevent City Council from hearing an appeal to change that to multifamily. I don't know what the intent is there, but certainly if you put a condominium structure here, with all due respect, if I was a developer of the McDonald Geo property, I would certainly consider changing my status because now I have condominiums all around me. I have six blocks on Main, one condominium here, and potentially more coming. So we may see more multifamily. This could be 3,000, 5,000 people, 3,500, 4,000 people square kilometer. This is suburbia. This is getting close to the perimeter. This is not downtown. I would urge City Council not to approve this zoning variance on population density alone. And the characteristics, I agree completely with the previous speakers. This is single-family residential property. This is what all of these were proposed. This is what they're being sold as. There are people right now being convinced this is a single-family dwelling, undeveloped. This is a single-family area. I haven't talked to the salesman, but I highly doubt they're telling him there's going to be a condo across the road.
I don't think that makes you a psychic.
Well, with all due respect, this changes the whole area significantly and potentially changes the McDonald Geo property.
Sir, three-quarters of the McDonald property is zone multiple, where it comes up to Main Street,
correct,
across at the church and...
Correct, because you're tied to those
part.
Old zoning laws. Correct.
No, that was new. We did that to make it the same, but not where it came back to the house.
Right.
It was only what it was.
But none of
in
this.
Front of the school.
This, if you go back.
No,
and
that's
I lost
family.
It. I've got to go back a slide or two. If you could.
No, that part we did single family.
Thank you.
For you and your neighbors,
right.
Actually.
This all here, you're right. Is
yeah.
Single family, and in here right now at present, I don't know. Ballpark. What do we got in there? 60 houses. No. They're not even included yet. You know, plus, as you say, up in here, unless the cursor up in here, these are multifamily.
Yeah.
So this whole area is going to have high population incidence. We already have my children go to the elementary school across Main Street, and I understand that City Council has very little control over school divisions. However, they're sending kids away from that building. There are people I know, there are families who are going into those blocks, which are situated right up in here, and they can't send their kids to the elementary school. This is a high-density area already. The community club, which is over here, my kids go to it. Yeah, I have a hard time getting ice time there. I have to go to Stonewall to get ice time. And you want to put more people in here?
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Registered for information, we have Brian Kazmarek. You wish to speak? Name and address for the record.
I'm Brian Kazmarek, 68 Meadowcrest Bay. I live in River Grove, just on the top of that map there. Just some information I'd like to find out a little bit more about this project. I was wondering about some specifics as to the parking and how they're going to be handled in this condominium complex. Is it underground parking? Is it above ground? Where's the drainage from the parking lots, the salt, the sand, the oil, that sort of thing? We're very close to a river here, and I'm just wondering how that's all being handled, if anybody can speak to that.
I can speak to their plan here that they've said to us as it will be underground parking with guest parking on the surface of 13 stalls or whatever, but underground parking. As for where the drainage is, it's like your house, it's city streets, we have city sewers. Nothing goes into the river at all.
So
the rainwater goes into a separate sewer, goes right into the river. The water that comes out of your taps or whatever goes into a city sewer, is taken across the street, is processed, and then returned to the river.
Okay. Yeah, so I was just concerned about...
Yeah, same as the single-family house.
Yeah.
Same as your house.
Right now, that area is all grass and trees, and so I'm just thinking about when we replace it with concrete in the parking lot, about the runoff from that. And I was wondering about the public use area along the river there. I do like the idea of the dedication of the public open space rather than payment to the city to allow more green space right there.
There's a certain distance where the city takes it free.
Okay.
Flood-prone lands and whatnot, the city takes it, doesn't count that as dedication. This would be beyond that.
That green triangle, maybe if we can get to that slide. Yeah.
There's a certain line where the city will take it. There's a certain line where it would be considered dedication.
So the city would be taking part of that?
Would be taking the stuff below it.
Right here.
Yeah. The city would take that because it's below the 700-year flood line. Above it, we would have to pay for or take in dedication, exactly.
And this, what is this area going to be in the proposal?
Mr. McDonald is here, I believe. That's his...
Well,
property
both.
The concept there is that it's an area that would be investigated from the point of view of geotechnical test holes to determine the stability of the bank and the stability of the soil. And based upon the results, we would take initiatives with regards to bank stabilization of the bank and the cooperation of the needs to extend that riverbank stabilization works on this property.
Okay, and so. Public access? Will there be public access to the riverfront along this property?
As the ward councillor, I can tell you that there is public access to the north,
right.
All the way behind River Grove. I'm only going to be here for 2.5 years, so I can't speak forever. But as the ward councillor, and Councillor Lazarenko agrees, because this used to be his ward, I know, the public access to the riverbank and pathway will continue till you hit the small properties, which is the first one being the Hell's Angels property.
Below that McDonald's?
Yeah. So at that point, you'd have to cut up to Scotia Street or something.
Okay. I'm just wondering if in the long term we're hoping to get all the way to the
riverbank. The city's policy is to always take the riverbank, to have public ownership of the actual bank everywhere. We're not buying out every home on Scotia or Wellington Crescent to get it, but when we get these opportunities, it's just a matter of how wide we keep it, but we always take the riverbank edge.
The plan is to have a walkway from here all down, going down south. The plan we're looking at, a long-term plan.
Okay, so that is part of the long-term, so whatever is the, if this is approved, then
it's a question of how much.
The public will have access.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And was the City Naturalist consulted on this development at all, proposal?
City Naturalist, I do know the development of the north. She certainly was.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't see, there is the matter of riverbanks. There's no forest here.
No, I just
there is no forest here. There are no trees in this area, so it's not her domain there. But the protection, there's clauses in here, if it's approved, that would cause studies to be undertaken to see how stable the riverbank is, and they would have to pay for stabilization. But this isn't quite like it is to the north.
No,
this is a higher bank.
I live right in there.
Yeah.
I understand. I just wondered if it was, she was consulted along, because it is part of that whole corridor.
No, our geotechnical engineer, I mean, there's no continuation of wildlife beyond there. Hell's Angels would have them for breakfast. Yeah, it's not. This particular part isn't her domain.
Be careful. Be careful when you say those two words, Hell's Angels.
And I just one comment. The owner, I forget the name, sir.
Richard.
I certainly have to empathize with you. And the point that handouts were not given to people who are going to be living in those areas, and just hear the homeowner. That's really not a fair situation, especially when those people are in the throes of building right now.
But there's a point. It's a lot less fair to let it be built and then have people move in. The best thing is to have the most dense stuff in, then let other people come, but not if they've already bought the land and they're stuck.
Yeah, I just say they should be consulted
in
this process.
That's what you do.
Thank you, Mr. Kazmarek.
Good point.
Also registered in for information, M. McDonald on Scotia Street. Okay. That is there anyone else who wishes to speak for information or opposition? Okay. Mr. Palubeski, would you like to rebut?
Yeah, and then to think about it.
I'm not going to rebut. I understand the difficulty in terms of laying out and planning a neighborhood. And what we try to do is make reasonable judgments based upon not only the expectations as they are today, but what this neighborhood may be like 50 years from now, and what kind of sustainable development may make sense 25, 50 years from now. I am aware from the planning point of view that what we're endeavoring to do in our cities is develop in a more sustainable way, which means taking advantage of locations that have infrastructure in place that are not necessarily greenfield locations without schools, without community clubs, without parks and recreation areas, that don't have transit, that don't have access to major arterial corridors that connect living areas with work areas and shopping areas. I'm also concerned and aware that one of the important tenets in planning is looking at a stability in a neighborhood. And part of the stability of the neighborhood is what's called aging in place. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, River Grove and Riverdale and River Bend are neighborhoods that are approaching 30 years in age. I've been part of designing those neighborhoods. And I know that people who have been in those neighborhoods have stayed in those neighborhoods a long time, raised their children. And we've had a number of responses when I was doing these projects about the ability for somebody within the neighborhoods who could sell their house because their children have gone, but they didn't want to move out and leave their friends' network. Our response to this is basically, this is a small site. It's got very high costs because of the infrastructure that has been put in adjacent to it. It is in an excellent location with regards to multiple family development. It is in a very desirable location overlooking the river. It's in a very desirable location that it's on a transit route. It's in a very desirable location because of the amenities that are within the area. And it's in a very desirable location from the city policy perspective in that it is located close to an arterial street that brings connectivity within this site to work areas and shopping areas. We think it's an appropriate policy to apply to the city. We know that Plan Winnipeg supports this type of infill development. Certainly it'd be much greater or better if we put it in a neighborhood that is on the edge of the city, and this was the first project in it and was multiple family, but it won't work. Multiple family works better if it can be connected with the neighborhood and serve a purpose in the neighborhood as an opportunity for people who live there, raise their children, to age in place and have an option. We're looking at multiple use in our neighborhoods. That's why some of the attraction of this neighborhood is that we have a shopping area that's in close proximity. We have schools that service this area. We have walkways and interconnected open space systems that serve the area. We have sports facilities that are open to the people in the area. This is an excellent neighborhood. It will not be, property values will not be reduced by having a condominium development of this quality and scale in the location. What will happen is the neighborhood will become viewed from a characteristic point of view as offering everything that normally would not be offered, where we cookie cutter things where we put single family over here and we separate the schools and we put them over there and this is over here. No connectivity. And neighborhoods that are thriving, neighborhoods that are effective and interesting areas have this mixture of development. 80 residential units here targeted towards people that have raised families in this area, want to stay in the area. They're not going to be competing with single family to put more people in terms of the community club, to add more people to the elementary school. These are people that have lived in the area that are interested in staying in the area. If the city is interested in terms of extending the open park system along the river frontage and potentially connecting it to this location here, which my client owns, which is actually an access that Mr. Sampson has the right of use of, we would have no concern in terms of extending the open space system along the river frontage of the property and then connecting the trail up towards this access right. If the city in the long term felt that it wanted to extend this across Mr. McDonald's property, we would extend the open space dedication along that portion of the site that would be rehabilitated and protected from the point of view of riverbank stabilization. My understanding was in the past was that the city would find this as the terminus. The sidewalks in the Ridgecrest Avenue would be used to link to a sidewalk that is planned, coming down the extension of Scotia Street. Scotia Street would be used as a sidewalk, and at this location on John Black Road, it would go under the bridge adjacent to the Kildonan Golf Course and interconnected with Kildonan Park. But, you know, if there's an interest, because the previous plan did not provide a public open space here, that's why we looked at preserving this view and then redirecting that pedestrian traffic like so should this happen.
Thank you, Mr. Kolodowski. Councilor Lazarenko.
Thank you, Mr. Kolodowski. What would the average cost of the condominium be? The lowest and highest.
The unit?
Yes, per unit.
They'll be over $340,000.
Average cost? $340,000. Mm-hmm. What's the highest?
In terms of unit sizes, the units are going to be 1,100 to 1,350 square feet. I mean, this is all going to be market-driven once we get into our actual construction costing, but the higher-end unit may be close to $500,000, depending which floor.
Thank you.
I don't have any questions. No,
okay.
Prepared to go beyond there. Secret information from the planet.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Sampson.
Yeah.
You've had your opportunity to speak. Okay, Mr. Podgorski, stand up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Councilor Lazarenko? Councilor Alfonso?
Mr. Chairman, we've heard from both sides the reasons there haven't been much opposition. One is that Mr. Podgorski has done his job. The Scotia Street residents are all available, and not to see Marlena Richard here tells me that they've been satisfied by, you know, as leaders of the among the residents on Scotia Street. As for the other side, yeah, we can't wait till all the houses are built to make a decision one way or the other. But on the other hand, we must take into account we are going to be affecting those people if we allow a pig farm, if we allow an airport, if we allow one house. We are going to be affecting those people. To what extent, of course, that's what we have to look at. And it is important. We've had someone here talk about this is a single-family area. Tell you what, there aren't any more single-family areas in Winnipeg. And if you listen to the planning groups and social welfare groups, everybody should live in an apartment block. But we have integrated communities, and there will be ownership housing, there will be rental housing, there will be single-family housing, there will be multiple-family housing. And everybody, in theory, agrees with it till it comes to their backyard, and everybody wants protection. What we have here, I have to remember, I've forgotten it in the past, we have an owner who is not necessarily, whatever is approved here, is not necessarily going to be the developer. They can get the zoning and sell the land, and a good builder like Qualico, good developer, or a bad one like Genstar, I think I saw Representative Genstar in the audience, could come in, and they don't build, by the way. So the pretty pictures at this point mean nothing. It just means they can put 80 units on that land up to a certain height. We can attach certain plans, but there aren't plans to the point that you could attach to this that we have here. We can't say whether it be owned or rented, although what they plan to build, you can't do for rental. But We can't, the city does not have the power to put a law and say, all the housing in this area must be ownership. You can't have any rental. We don't have that power. We can't say the age of the people in there. So we can't say this nice, where's the thing, 55 plus. Oh, there, or no, it's not. They're going to start it. There it is, 55 plus condominium development. It could be rental apartments to 20-year-olds. We can't discriminate that way. We can't put those conditions on. Developers can, but we can't. Homes, you see in certain areas, have to be so many square feet. It's always a condition of the developer, never of the city, because we can't do that. What we can do is limit the height. What we can do is limit the density. I have no plan to say no to rezoning this land and leave it as an empty field forever with one house on it. The city has reached this area, and it's going to be developed at some city standard. I would ask committee to agree with me to take the reports as read, close the receipt of representations, and lay both this and the variance over till September to allow me, which is legal, to meet with the planners and come up with, I'm not satisfied that it's the right height or the right density for this property. I'm not convinced it isn't either. But nothing I've heard today has given me that I feel comfortable to make a decision. So I'm going to move a layover, and I am under the law allowed to consult with our planners. I'm just not allowed to consult with anybody who made or could make representations here, and I won't. So that said, do you mind, Harry, if I make a layover motion?
Mr. Chairman,
I just don't want to cut you off.
No, no. So, Mr. Chairman, I know in the time that I was represented there, 10 years, Council Chairman's taking a look at this. We switch every 10 years. The boundaries are changed. I know there was there were problems way back at that time, and a lot of development has taken place. It was due diligence that we did in the past, and I think that we due diligence now done with Councilor Shaughnessy closing the representation to be concluded. And lay this over till the September meeting, and I'm sure that the council for the area is going to be able to work with the planners and to make sure that the best can be done to satisfy both parties, including the developer. The developer has done his due diligence, you know, to a big margin of what he did in the past. So I have no problem with that, Mr. Chairman. I welcome that motion.
Okay, the motion's been made. I'll call
I move that the report of the reports of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All in favor? Aye. Contrary,
move
carried.
Move the receipt of public representations be concluded.
All in favor? Aye. Contrary, carried.
Move that the...